This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. We've been talking for the last couple of hours and, in fact, had an interesting debate with Brian Pruitt of Red State about what the hell is it that these TV pundits are talking about when they say Democrats need to move to the middle. What does that mean? And this is, by the way, the Republican advice. The Republicans on TV are all saying Democrats need to move to the middle if they want to beat Trump. And why are we listening to Republicans? But we'll get back to that conversation in just a minute. Right now on the line with us is our old buddy Greg Palast, the investigative journalist, author, filmmaker, his most recent, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. GregPalast.com is the website. You can tweet him at Greg_Palast, just like I'm Tom_Hartman. Greg, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be with you again, Tom.
So recap for us exactly where we're at with regard to Venezuela.
Well, where we're at is there's a guy named Juan Guaido who announced himself as president, 35-year-old white guy. This is a nation made up of mostly mestizo, dark people. He's announced himself as president, never ran for president, and it was after a call from Donald Trump saying, you call yourself the president, and I'll call you the president. And that's how now Trump and his oily allies are literally telling Venezuela who their president is. The guy never claimed, he didn't even run. The only person who's ever said he's run for office is some woman named Kirsten Gillibrand. I don't know who she is, but she said that we have to recognize Juan Guaido as president because he was legitimately elected. Senator Gillibrand, when was that election? It never was held.
Yeah.
So we have the U.S. imposing a president. Why? Well, underneath, Venezuela is the largest reserve of oil on the planet. Go to the OPEC site, you'll see it has reserves that are about four times that of Saudi Arabia.
Whoa.
And what's going on here? So there's many things I could address. We've talked before.
Well, let's start out about that oil. What, this is a special
oil, unique kind of oil,
right?
Yes. Well, first of all, it's a very heavy oil, super heavy oil, and it's the number one customer for Venezuela are the refineries on the Gulf Coast of Texas owned by, guess who, Koch Industries. So Venezuela's number one customer are the brothers Koch. And normally you get a discount for gunky, horrible, heavy oil that has to be sold cheap. The Canadians knock off 30% off the price of the oil because it's so gunky from their heavy tar sands. Well, the Kochs are captive customers. Hugo Chavez, who I knew, and I know the current president too, said, look, we know their captive customers are going to stick it to them. They charge a massive premium to the Kochs for their oil. The Kochs don't like that. So they have two choices, either complete the XL pipeline, which brings down the Canadian junk to the Gulf.
Now, hang on just a second. Let me just back up a little bit. My understanding is that the reason why all this is happening, everything you're describing, is because it takes a completely different kind of refinery to turn this gunky, thick, heavy oil into gasoline and diesel fuel and other things from a normal refinery. And the only one of those kind of special kind of refineries for that special kind of oil, which can then only process that special kind of oil, is the one that's owned by Koch Industries on the coast, right?
That's correct. In other words, Koch Industries has refineries in the middle of Texas oil fields. They can't use Texas oil because it's not dirty enough, heavy enough, filthy enough, believe it or not, for the Koch Industries refinery.
Right.
So they're stuck with Venezuela, and they don't like being stuck with the price that's demanded of Venezuela, so they need some regime change going on here. So the U.S. government has embargoed Venezuela. That is, Trump has embargoed Venezuela.
Which is devastating their economy.
Devastating. They can't get food. They can't get medicine. It's absolute devastation. And by the way, then they say, oh, look how incompetent the government is. People can't eat. And they had this phony thing where Marco Rubio and Trump shipped a bunch about boxes of food for like 2,000 people to the Brazilian border. And the government of Venezuela said, we don't need your charity. We're a rich nation. Pay us for our oil. Right now, the Kochs are holding some of the money from Venezuela that they're supposed to pay for the oil. Some of it is under the control of the U.S. Treasury, Steve Mnuchin, who's made sure that the number one creditor of Venezuela, of Venezuela's American oil arm, which is called Citgo, you've seen those stations.
Yep.
The number one creditor is Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs, where Steve Mnuchin hails from, They're getting a chunk of the money. The Kochs are doing very well by this process of stealing Venezuela's money. In the meantime, the people are starving. And that's what's happening. It's a choking embargo, and you have other oily nations who are joining in to give Trump. Normally, you know, Trump is isolated in foreign affairs. So why are nations like Canada and the British government joining in on this attack?
Well, isn't the largest or second largest source of revenue for Canada's economy oil?
Yes. So they are in direct competition with Venezuela. And here's one of the things we shouldn't forget. One of the charges against the current elected president, not the Trump chosen president, but the elected president,
right, Maduro,
is that he's corrupt, his government is corrupt, and the oil money has been stolen. Yeah, it's been stolen, but by the Kochs, by Mnuchin, by Goldman Sachs, etc. This is a pretty funny claim by, for example, Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada, is right now under investigation for covering up massive bribes to Muammar Gaddafi for bribing that government for its oil in Libya.
Right, back in the day.
And the UK government also was paying bribes, about $200 million, to the Saudis because they could be bribed. And the government had quashed that investigation under national security grounds. In the U.S., the Minerals and Mining Services was known as a cesspool of corruption, trading sex and goodies and Super Bowl tickets for U.S. oil resources. That's in the U.S.
Right.
Exxon, American flag-waving company, ExxonMobil, was part of a group of oil companies that paid a $160 million bribe to the president of Kazakhstan. And by the way, we're not worried about those dictators like Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, the Saudi royals who are just dictators in bathrobes. We don't worry about democracy in those nations, do we?
Right.
And by the way, an Exxon official did get 3 years in prison for that bribery, but no one else. It goes on and on. And what I found from oil company executives in the years that I've been covering Venezuela, I did it first for The Guardian and BBC. That's when, and I was down in Venezuela many times, met with Chavez, with Maduro, with the opposition, too. And what oil company executives were telling me, the frustration with Venezuela, is that they couldn't be bribed. Chavez was unbribable. Is there no corruption? Whenever you have oil, you've got dirty hands somewhere.
Sure.
In the system.
So a question,
but, yeah.
Greg, if here's a hyper-simplistic understanding of the situation, and let me lay that out and you can tell me if I've got right or wrong, and if I have it right, then I have a question based on it.
Okay.
It sounds to me like what you're saying is the Koch brothers own a refinery that can basically only refine this heavy, heavy oil that comes from either Venezuela or Canada. And the Keystone XL pipeline is an effort to get that Canadian tar sands oil down to the Koch brothers refinery, but it has not yet been completed. So basically, the only place they can get the oil to make their money and leave the waste products in Texas and Louisiana is from Venezuela. Am I right so far? Okay.
Yeah.
Step two. So then the Koch brothers start leaning on the Trump administration and the Republican Party and one of their toadies, Marco Rubio, to make life absolutely miserable for the Venezuelans, because the Venezuelans are charging them, you know, a premium for this oil, and in the process trying to take down the government, because the new guy, this white guy that you described, who has claimed he's president, even though he's just like the Speaker of the House, the equivalent of Speaker of the House, has already said that he's willing to bring the American oil companies in. He's willing to basically privatize some of Venezuela's oil and sell that oil to the Koch refinery back at the spot prices, back at lower prices. Am I right so far?
You are right so far. Let me add one other thing. The British government last year asked the Venezuelan government to give British Petroleum the oil fields that had been controlled by the French Total.
Right.
They didn't worry about the dictatorship or democracy or corruption. They wanted those oil fields. The minute the Venezuelan government said, no, you can't have those fields, British Petroleum, we're keeping it for Venezuelans, suddenly they are dictators, and the British government has withheld $1.5 billion in gold, solid gold, kept in the basement of the British Exchequer that belongs to Venezuela. That money could feed a lot of people.
Oh, that's their reserves. Yeah. So here's my question: if everything that I described is accurate, then and Maduro is fighting for his life now because he took on these oligarchs. Why not just? Yeah. Why doesn't he just drop the price of his oil to the Coke refineries down to international spot prices? He'll still be able to have a profit, sell the oil, and basically say, "You guys back off. Stop, trying to foment a revolution against me, and I'll sell you the oil at reasonable prices."
Well, what you're saying, yeah. I mean, should he respond to a gun to his head? And the answer is probably yes. I'm going to tell you something. I know Maduro. I knew Chavez. Chavez, as he said, was a great chess player. He knew how to push just so far and no further. For example, he annoyed the oil companies and drove out Exxon by putting a 17% tax on Venezuelan oil. By the way, that's about what Sarah Palin taxed the oil companies in Alaska.
Right.
So he knew he could go so far and no further. For all his rhetoric, he didn't push further than
he was more pragmatic.
Geopolitics could happen. Maduro is a hardliner and not much of a chess player. And, the truth is when the British government, British Petroleum, comes to you and says, we would like your oil, you're supposed to say, yes, sir, and just bargain the terms. The guy was inflexible, and now, if you don't cuddle up to British Petroleum, you don't cuddle up to Exxon, you don't cuddle up to these
Coke Industries.
Oil. And the Koch brothers, baby, you've taken on some pretty heavy-duty cats, and unfortunately, it's not just Maduro, it's people, according to the UN rapporteur, and that's the official investigator from the UN, he says it's a medieval siege, it's a war crime because they are using starvation to obtain oil. That's the UN's official reporter.
Who is using starvation to obtain oil, according to the UN?
BP, the U.S., and its oil companies. Exxon wants to get back in and wants those fields back. Total wants back into France, etc.
Amazing. Greg, we're out of time, but it's a grim story that everybody needs to know about. There's a great summary of it all, along with a lot of good videos over at gregpalace.com, too. And Greg's movie, his most recent book and movie, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, which he recently updated. You can check that out. Greg_Palace is his Twitter handle. Greg, thanks for dropping by.
You're very welcome. Bye.
Great talking with you, my friend. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It is 18 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. And welcome back. Just to recap, I just want to kind of recap real quickly my plaintive cry. Now that we understand Venezuela, we understand what's going on there. Why is it that you can't turn on a cable TV news channel these days without seeing some TV pundit or panelist or even the host saying Democrats need to move to the middle or they're going to get wiped out in the next election? What the heck do they mean? I mean, do they mean the Dems should say it's just fine that 30 million Americans don't have health care? That the big banks are ripping us off to the tune of literally hundreds of billions of dollars that they declared in profits last year? And putting our economy at risk in the meantime? That fossil fuel and chemical companies should continue to poison our planet and actually increase the level, the speed at which they're poisoning our planet? I mean, this is what's coming out of the Trump administration's deregulation. Does it mean it's just fine if the drug companies, rip us off, if for-profit colleges rip us off, if for-profit charter schools keep ripping us off, that's just fine? Is that what you're talking about when you say we need to move to the center to maintain the status quo? Because these are all what's happening right now. This is what's going on. It's just fine that the American dream is dead, that this is the first generation in 240 years of American history that isn't going to do as well as their parents? That there's no need to bring back unions or union jobs? Is that what they're talking about? What the hell do these people mean? Mike in Goose Creek, South Carolina. Hey, Mike, thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up?
Hi, I'm almost 80 years old, and I grew up as socialism, not a dirty word. My grandfather was an old-fashioned socialist.
So was mine. It's one of the reasons my dad became a Republican.
And my grandfather used to talk to me a lot about it, and he used to give me all kind of literature mm-hmm. about, and it was all very progressive, you know. I mean, they were ahead of their time. They suggested Social Security way back in the 1920s.
Yeah.
I've always been a very liberal Democrat, and I sure don't want to go to the center, as you were saying.
How would you define the center, Mike? I still don't know what the hell that means.
I said I don't want to go there.
I know. I don't want to go there either, but I'm not even sure what these people are talking about. Are they talking about the center being those politicians who take a lot of money from corporations and billionaires?
I think they're talking about DLC.
But the DLC was all about taking money from big corporations, just making sure that they were, quote, clean corporations, white-collar corporations. Yeah. It's okay to take money from Google, but not BP.
Yeah. Well, I was in Cleveland, and when a DLC convention was being held in Cleveland, and they wouldn't let the United Auto Workers into that convention. And the auto workers were actually picketing that convention.
Amazing. What year was that, Mike? Do you remember?
Oh, that has to be in, about the time that...
Is that during the Clinton administration?
Clinton administration, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's this is terrible. Mike, thank you. That's the center. You're right. Thank you. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Ivan in Bartlett, Illinois. Hey, Ivan, what's on your mind today?
Hey, what's up, Tom?
I'm here.
Your earlier guest was right about the code.
Okay, my earlier guest, you're talking about Brian Pruitt from an hour ago?
Yes, sir.
The conservative writer for Red State? Okay.
Right.
For people who just tuned in, why don't you recap what you're talking about?
Well, we're talking about what it means to move to the center.
Uh-huh. And why Republicans like Brian Pruitt are recommending that Democrats should move to the center.
Yes, sir. Now, when the media speaks of moving to the middle, they are speaking in code. And the code is anybody but Bernie.
Yeah.
They are so afraid of Bernie's campaign. You know, he came out of the gate guns blazing. He raised big money in 2 days. His crowds are huge. He leads in every poll. I just took a poll yesterday on Daily Coast.
Yeah.
Bernie, 55%.
Yep.
Everybody else, 1-2. I think the highest may have been, what's her name, Kamala.
I think Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren were both in the teens in that poll, as I recall, and Bernie was over 50%.
No, I don't think they're in the teens. They're 7%.
Okay. We might have looked at it at different times of the day, too, because I know that Bernie really started picking up, and I'm guessing that was because, you know, the word got out that there's a poll.
Yeah, and even Daily Coast tried to skew it by saying, our last poll, the Bernie Bulls must have really voted.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not buying that. But, what I would buy is that word traveled among Bernie acolytes or followers or whatever. I realize Bernie Bros is a slur. It was a specific slur to indicate that, you know, he was running against a woman and blah de blah de blah. But in any case, I think you're right. I think they're scared to death of Bernie. And I'm not sure that they're not scared to death of Elizabeth Warren as well. Ivan, thank you. Very well said. Che in Center, Colorado. Am I saying your name right?
Yes, sir.
What's up?
Nothing. I'm just listening to Tom talk right now.
No, that's me. You're on the air, Che.
Oh, my God, no way.
Yeah, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
I want to thank you for everything that you do, and am loving it so much. When you talk about centrist, though, you act like there's a difference between Republicans and Democrats, and that is a very big division.
I don't understand what you're saying.
it's just a matter of I want everybody to get along, and we all have the centrist idea is much more of a left-right, I hate guns, I hate capital punishment, but what we get together on is the idea of everybody coming together.
Yeah. Here's the problem. You know, for several centuries in the United States, you had African Americans saying, we would like our rights. You had women saying, we would like our rights. You had gay people saying, we would like our rights. You had other minorities saying, we would like our rights. And you had basically two groups opposing those. The progressives were always saying yes. The two groups opposing them were the people who were nakedly opposing them, the racists, the misogynists, saying, no, no way. And then you had this group of so-called centrists who said, yeah, we agree with you. You should have the right to vote, women. You should have the right to have a job and live in a neighborhood, people of color. But we've got to do it slowly. We've got to take, and it took us hundreds of years. And Che, respectfully, I think a lot of people are saying enough.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Che, thank you very much for your call. I share your sentiment. I want people to be coming together as well. I just don't think we should be letting Republicans define the terms of Democratic debates. Fair and only slightly unbalanced, Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, you know Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, is really, really roiling things, really making things happen, really boiling the water, really bringing stuff out. When they start singing songs about her, my old friend Jim Turr, T-E-R-R, who owns who is BlueCanyonProductions.com, and a brilliant musician. He's got CDs out and all kinds of stuff. Just sent me a brand new song he just recorded with permission to play it on the air. And I'm going to play a little bit of it for you. This is hysterical. Listen to this. This is the setup, and here it comes, and you'll figure out what it's all about real quickly.
You better shape up and support what's good, or she'll kick your butt like you know that she should. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is coming to town.
There you go, yes.
Fairer wages, single payer health care. She's working class, so you know she's been there. AOC is coming to town.
And then here's the sort of the last half of it here. Get right over to here.
They've tried to tear down her dancing, her boyfriend, and her debts. Don't think you'll get her that easily, or you'll be sorry you tried, I'll bet. So have some respect. Give her a hearing. She's the voice of reason that some have been fearing. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is the new kid in town.
There you go, Jim Turr, BlueCanyonProductions.com. Oh, what a hoot. You know, there is so much great creative talent out there. Tom in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today?
I need a little bit of time here to cover some points, but this you provoked me to call in when you were debating that guy from Red State. And I want to touch on three things. The Davos meeting, where a Dutch economist was debating Michael Dell. CPAC.
Tom, I'll give you 2 minutes.
Okay, quickly. So Rick Wilson, you know, he's that conservative consultant that wrote a book, Everything Trump Touches.
Yeah, he's on MSNBC constantly.
Yeah. Made a good point, though. He said, Democrats do not speak American, and he's right on. So, first of all, the Davos guy, the Dutch economist, Michael Dell says, name me one country that's successful that has a 70% tax rate. And the economist looks at him and says, America. What do you mean? He starts going into the FDR New Deal, a golden age of prosperity, and it just blew Michael Dell away, and he couldn't even, he just was like dumbstruck, right?
Yeah.
Your guest. When you started listing off the OECD countries, and he said, well, we're not any of them. We're unique. We don't care what they are. We need, and you do this often. I mean, I learned so much from you, but we need to Americanize the message and always connect it to FDR, progressivism, socialism, and the Europeans copied us. We
yeah.
have to Americanize it, right? And, yeah, that's all I wanted to say was that they want to paint us as un-American. And they want to paint themselves as American. That's why Trump, the draft dodger, hugs the flag. I mean, What is that, right? And they paint, you know, Kerry and Max Cleland, the war heroes, they paint them as traitors. We have to speak American and invoke FDR vision versus the Reagan vision.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Tom. And what was the joke? I think it was Joy Behar said, if Trump had hugged that flag any tighter, he'd have to pay it hush money. I mean, it's like, that is, you know, what was Samuel Johnson, you know, I believe it was Samuel Johnson who said that patriotism is the last refuge of the scoundrel.
Yes. And I always, when I debate my relatives and friends, I've converted a few. I always ask them, let me ask you, do you think China is freer than France? What do you mean? Well, you guys love China with their unregulated capitalism, and you say France is socialist and not, because they confuse freedom with capitalism. Yeah. Glenn Beck did that this week, by the way, at CPAC, talking about capitalism equating to freedom. So we have to, and when you start talking to them and you say, listen, China is less free than socialist France. Don't you get it?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You know? Tom, spot on. Thank you very much for the call. Rebecca in Seattle. Hey, Rebecca, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for listening on KBCS. What's on your mind?
So two things before I go to make my point. One, I just want to say I really appreciate your point of view. I'm a daughter of a lifelong Fox-watching Republican, and I'm a 20-year Democracy Now!-watching activist. So
good on you.
I definitely can relate to that. You know, the frustration of caring deeply about people that you have extremely vastly different political stances and wanting to bridge that gap somehow in some way, and how important that is.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I just wanted to also agree with you wholeheartedly that regardless of who the nominee is on the Democratic side, regardless of how we feel about it, everybody needs to vote Trump out if he's not already in prison by then.
Yep. well, and then it would be voting Pence out, so it's the same thing. Yep, I'm with you.
Or whoever the Republican is, because they all basically have the same agenda.
Yep.
So all of that said, I wanted to speak to the discussion we had earlier about Republicans trying to direct Democrats towards the center, and kind of my assessment of why they might be doing that. If we take a look back in time, when Bernie was running his campaign, he had a historical campaign. I mean, people came out in thousands and thousands. The margins of his support were like 80%, 90%, 70%. He woke up the voice of the people. It's not even about him. I mean, I support Bernie, but I mean, it's about the message.
Yeah, in fact, one of his new slogans is us, not me, or not me,
exactly.
Us.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so, I mean, if we just look at the climate during that time, America, I mean, was on fire for revolution, for change, for movement. I mean, he really spoke to what is happening on the ground and what the people want, what the people want. And I think that that's extremely scary to the Republicans who hold power and are in bed with all of these corporations and, you know, big interests, because it's a threat to their whole existence. And so, of course, they're trying to water it down, like, oh, water it down, water it down, go towards the center, because in reality, that's what would win. I mean, if we look at what was happening in the polls, I mean, Bernie's message is extremely popular.
Yes.
And the people are behind those messages and those agendas. He brings together the poor, the marginalized, working class people. I mean, uniting the people, the 99% against the 1%, that's a threat. And the Republicans don't like that. So they're going to try as much as they can to try to steer the narrative in a different direction.
Here, in my opinion, is what the Republicans are doing and why so many Republican consultants and former Republican consultants who still have loyalties to that side, essentially, whether they are hosts on cable television or whether they are panelists on cable television, are telling Americans to move to the center. They look at, and forget about actually who how these people governed, right? I'm going to be talking here about Clinton and Obama. Forget about how they governed, because that there were all kinds of other circumstances that had to do with everything from, you know, the Gingrich Revolution to the rise of the Tea Party and all this other stuff. But Bill Clinton in 1992 campaigned on a speech called The New Covenant. You can Google it. It is Bernie Sanders. He or nearly. It's 70% Bernie Sanders. Bill Clinton campaigned as a true progressive, and America elected him overwhelmingly. Al Gore, on the other hand, in 2000, refused to campaign as a true progressive. He campaigned as a centrist, and he lost the election. Now, I think he won the election in Florida. It's a whole other thing, but it should have been a blowout, right? Al Gore was the only Democrat frankly, I think in my lifetime, who openly campaigned as a centrist, as I'm kind of a middle-of-the-road guy. I want to do something about climate change, but otherwise I'm a middle-of-the-road guy and I can work with Republicans. And it was a disaster for him. And then, you know, Barack Obama campaigned on hope and change, and change and progressivism are equally radical things, and people overwhelmingly elected Obama. So the Republicans look at these three election cycles, Clinton, Gore, and Obama, and they say, you know, when the Republicans run on platforms of progressive issues and change, they win. And when Democrats run on, as Al Gore did, when Democrats run on a platform of, oh, you know, well, things are okay, we can tweak around the edges, in other words, I'm a centrist, they lose. And so thus the Republicans are showing up on all these TV shows saying, hey, you Democrats, you need to have a centrist running for president. In fact, you need even more of them. Here's John Hickenlooper. You can vote for him. And it makes me crazy. What do you think, Rebecca? Makes sense?
I completely agree. And one last note, like, regardless, like, I'm a firm believer in united we stand and divided we fall. And our country is so divided right now. And we really need the people, ultimately the people, to come together at the grassroots and push this movement forward to heal these divisions and really, you know, make a future for ourselves.
Totally with you. You know, Rebecca, thank you so much for the call. It's great to hear from you, and I really appreciate it. Patsy in Arroyo Grande. Is it Grand or Grande, California?
No. Arroyo Grande.
Yeah. Hey, Patsy, what's up?
Yeah. Okay, well, first I just wanted to mention that Dante thought that the middle of hell, which is the fifth circle of hell, was where all the greedsters go, the people that are wrathful, that you know, more or less the way we live, sort of what the Republicans like, the greedy,
yeah,
the hoarders,
the grifters,
everything, the whole thing. That was, I think, what their concept is, but that, I'm just being, you know, tongue-in-cheek here. What I really wanted to talk about is Medicare is a centrist idea, whether people realize it or not. It was based on Blue Cross, as it was in the 60s, you know, the 80% $100 deductible, and for seniors, because they were a high-risk population that couldn't get Blue Cross. And it was also because of the practitioners, the doctors. They didn't want to go work for the government, so they were able to have their private practice to still be assured of being paid. So I get really kind of upset every time people call it a socialist idea. It's not. It was a compromise between government and the private sector, and that's really what I wanted to say.
Yeah, and you said it very well. And if when people, these TV pundits, said centrists, what they were talking about were the politicians who espouse the policies that more than 70% of Americans want, just making that the cutoff, right? A supermajority of Americans want. If, when they said centrist, that's what they meant, then yeah. I would say, yeah, because the majority of Americans, more than 70% of Americans, want Medicare for all, want the big banks broken up, want corporations restrained, want better pollution controls, want free college for everybody, want debt relief for the students who got suckered by people like Donald Trump with his phony scam university. The majority, more than 70% of Americans, want all those things. Those are center positions. That is the radical middle, right? The phrase that I used when we first started the show 15 years ago. But the fact of the matter is that when they say centrist, that's not what they mean. When they say centrist, what they mean are Democrats who are taking money from special interests and Democrats who are not advocating essentially radical or rapid change in the direction of every other developed country in the world. This is not, these are not experiments. These are things that have been proven to work in radical countries like Canada and France and Germany. I mean, it's, yeah. Patsy, well said. Thank you very much for the call. Bryce, excuse me, in Glendale, California. Hey, Bryce, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching YouTube. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm just calling to...
Hey, Bryce, let me just put you on hold for a second. I'm sorry. I totally missed my cue, and I'm going to hit a break here in less than a second. And in fact, there it is, and it's one of those hard breaks that I have no control over. I went too long. My apologies, Bryce. We'll pick your call up right on the other side of this. What a day, huh? I get all cranked up and I forget to even look at my own clock. The question, why is nobody telling Republicans to move to the center? Or maybe they are, but what do they mean by that? And what do they mean when they say to Democrats, move to the center?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm just not getting this. Or actually, I think I do get it, and it's pretty ugly. That's really the problem I've got with it. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Bryce, let's try that again. My apologies. Bryce in Glendale, California. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. That's all right. But, like I was just wanting to make my point, when you talked about these TV pundits and all that and how they defame and slander Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and basically, like you said a long time ago, you would never appear on a cable network that would tell you what to say and give you a script. And basically, these are ruthless people that are lowlife, dressed up in their suits with makeup on, just spouting off lies.
Well, in many cases, I can't disagree with that analysis, Bryce. I know some mm-hmm. of these people, and some of them actually are. I think they're doing the best, and that they're. Yeah. You know, but I think that they live in bubbles. They fundamentally misunderstand America.
Exactly. And to my second point, do you think Joe Biden entering the 2020 presidential race will hurt Bernie?
No, I don't think Joe Biden has a chance. And if he gets into the race, his numbers are—they're never going to break 10%. I just don't think. And he's—and now with this new rule, which is just brilliant, that Tom Perez put into place, where you've got to get 65,000 small donations in order to qualify for the Democratic debates. Maybe Biden could get that, but we'll see. I mean, if I'm completely wrong and Biden ends up our nominee, I'm going to do everything I can to get him elected because he's a Democrat. Mm-hmm. And the Republicans are just plain old flat out evil. But I just don't think that America is over it with so-called centrists. Bryce, thanks a lot for the call. Debbie in Lake Villa, Illinois. Hey, Debbie. Thanks for listening and tuning in. What's up? Debbie? I'm going to put Debbie on hold. She's on line 7, Louise, if you want to check it out. Colleen in Manorville, New York. Watch this on Free Speech TV. Hey, Colleen, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Good afternoon. And one, I want to thank you so much. You give me such an education on all of these issues.
Thank you.
And so many issues in so little time.
Yeah.
So, so many things that you bring up strike a chord with me, but the one I want to talk about is that, you know, at the time that I was a young child and my parents separated, and my mother was my main caregiver, and not just care in terms of custodial care, but in terms of financial care. Mm-hmm. And even though I loved my father dearly, and I took care of him at the end of his life, and he was a World War II veteran who developed Parkinson's from a head injury that he sustained from his military service. Mm-hmm. He nickeled and dimed my mother out of every penny of child support that he possibly could get away with. And I could see, looking on things now, that there is no possibility that my mother would be able to work just one job as a secretary and support us.
You mean today, whereas she could back then?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And with all the other things that you bring up, the Republicans being evil and all of that, I agree, but my point is that there was a time when, first of all, men should be responsible for their children, whether you're with the mother or not, whether you ever married her or not. We have DNA tests now that you can say, this is your child and this is your responsibility. But aside from that, is that there was a time when a woman could have, and there were two of us, that you could have two children and support them and not be feeling like you had to, you know, work three jobs.
Right, with a single salary. And there was a time when you could have stay-at-home moms or stay-at-home dads, for that matter. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and my dad worked in a tool and die shop, and they had four children. I was the oldest of four boys. Spot on, Colleen. Thank you for sharing your story with us. It's a compelling one, and it really illustrates what we've been talking about all day. Thank you. Welcome back, Sean in Stamford, Connecticut. Hey, Sean, what's on your mind today?
Hi, I love the show. It's been so great to listen to you all this time.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, two things I want to bring up. Number one, you were talking about moving to the center before.
Right.
And I remember watching Rachel Maddow some time back, it was maybe a decade ago, and she had mentioned how as the Republicans kept moving to the right from the days of Reagan, so did the Democrats as well. They moved to the center, has kept moving to the right, and now if you look at someone like George Will, he was a conservative, but now he looks like a left-wing lunatic because the party has moved so far to the right.
Yeah, it's called the Overton window. It's the boundaries, the window within which, quote, acceptable and normal and mainstream dialogue can happen. And that has moved so far to the right since the 1960s, 70s, that this country is almost indistinguishable from what it was back then.
Right. The other thing I wanted to bring up was you also remember when I was in high school, we talked about the 1954 Brown versus Board of Education.
Right.
Remember what was the text in the ruling? With all deliberate speed.
That's
correct. And
great.
We had, what did that mean as a high school student? And I'm thinking to myself, this is what you're talking about. They're saying, oh, you got to move slowly. Well, isn't that all deliberate speed?
Yeah, that all deliberate speed. Well, you know, there was a decision. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the name of the decision, but there was a Supreme Court decision either in 55 or 56, which basically said that the 1954 Brown decision is not being implemented rapidly enough, and we're going to put some teeth in it. But even that, I mean, that was still the 1950s. And, I was in elementary school through the 1950s. I was in junior high school and high school in the early 1960s. And, we still had segregated schools. I mean,
Arlington, Virginia was one of the, I remember in 57, they integrated. Well, the state told them not to.
Oh, Virginia shut down their public school system for a whole year.
Right. And Arlington defied the state of Commonwealth of Virginia. And I know what they did to them, if anything, but they openly defied the governor of Virginia.
Remarkable. Remarkable. Sean, thanks for the call. So where is the center? And what is all deliberate speed? That's a great question, Sean. Anyhow, we'll be back tomorrow. I think Congressman Pocan's going to be with us. Yep, he's going to start off the program in the first hour. He's going to be taking your calls. That'll be a lot of fun. For the hour, and then we've got a lot of other, great content to share with you, and of course the news cycle just never stops. So we will continue with that, and in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us, and that includes you. So please, get out there, get active, tag, you're it. I'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.